Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the 25th episode of the Master the Start podcast presented by GoMahi.com. And we have an exceptional episode ahead for you guys. Today, we have Paul Batts on the show. Paul is changing the conversation about leadership. He founded Good Leadership Enterprises to help CEOs, business owners, executives, and community leaders grow with the idea of goodness pays. Paul's not-so-secret sauce is teaching how excellence, generosity, fairness, positivity are rewarded with great business results. Paul's personal mission is to help leaders grow by blending the 7 F's, faith, family, finances, fitness, friends, fun, and future into their leadership. I think you're going to love this episode because no matter who you are in the business world, or even if you're not in the business world, a lot of these lessons are going to be very applicable to your life. Settle in. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, Google Play. Also, please make sure you comment, leave us a review. It'd mean the world to us. It doesn't even matter if the comment's good or bad. I say this almost every week. We just want a comment. Who is going to be the first person out there to give us a comment? Make sure you enjoy this episode of Master the Start. We'll talk soon. Paul, well, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Let's just jump right in. Can you give us a quick background about who you are? Kind of what you've done in your past, what you're currently doing, and then we'll kind of dive into the specifics.
Gosh, let me go way back. I grew up in the upper Midwest. My dad is a veterinarian. My mom was a music teacher. And I grew up in a house that had lots of music, lots of personal exploration. I was also a really big sports fan. I spent my schooling days in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. When I got bored with my life working, you know, flipping hamburgers and bagging groceries, I started a painting business with one of my best friends when I was 17 years old, and that changed my life. Taught me how to negotiate, how to make more money than all of my friends, and I realized that I really liked talking to people that had the ability to make deals and to employ us in ways that were very respectful. I grew that business enough where I had to hire a bunch of my friends, so much so I had to run down and get them out of their basement bedrooms to make sure they'd show up on the job site in the morning. And those kind of experiences have really shaped my life. I decided to go to Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota, which was up towards Minneapolis-St. Paul from Sioux Falls. And I just met people like me. I immediately understood that connected with the suburban Twin Cities kids who lived a very cultured life. And after, you know, studying music and psychology and business in college, I made my way up to the Twin Cities, and I've been here ever since. And it's been a wonderful career. I've been in professional services my entire life, always on the front end. I started doing business development and strategy work in a small PR and advertising firm. Then I became a partner in charge of business development at a bigger firm called Padilla Spear Beardsley, where John Beardsley and Lynn Casey really changed my life forever. I was the first partner that had no billing goals in the firm. And my job was to partner with the other 13 small business units we had to make sure each one of them was growing. And so that opened me up to this field of executive coaching. And one of our clients spotted something in me, and she offered me a job to become president of her firm. I was there for 7 years, largely doing the same work. And then when the economy melted down, my wife and I decided to start our own firm. So I started Good Leadership Enterprises on October 31, 2009. And on November 1st, we had our own entity. And so we're coming up on 10 years. It's been one heck of a ride. And so we do executive coaching from the angle that goodness pays. We started an enterprise called Good Leadership Enterprises that allows us to touch people through inspiring events. It allows us to touch people through executive coaching, which is our primary business. And then also we have a publishing label called Good Leadership Press. And I really like to express myself through all three of those things. So that's the 2-minute story of who I am and how I got here.
I love it. So I have to ask, before I get into the nitty gritty about good leadership, what made you think you could actually create a profitable business off of that concept? Because it's so unique. Like, I haven't seen anything like it in the market.
Well, I'm glad you noticed. It a little bit came by accident. So the final 6 months in the other firm were really, really difficult. The economy was difficult. We had a partnership group that was not getting along, and I really hung in there to the best of my ability. But I was really suffering from stress disease, and I just wasn't sleeping. My life was kind of a mess. And my wife just said, hey, this is not worth it. We got to try something new. And so I quit on Halloween with the idea that I was going to go away and hide for 2 or 3 months. And the word got out on the street, and some clients found out, and my inbox and my cell phone were just completely jammed with, hey, what happened? How can we help messages? So I pulled together a group of advisors, and they said, you know what? You can't, everybody wanted to have coffee. And they said, you can't have that much coffee. So call them, get them all together. You're writing a book, and which is true. And they said, why don't you treat the breakfast meeting like it's a focus group? So like a dumb guy, I sent out a message. I didn't ask for any RSVPs and said, we're going to meet. You're going to have to buy your own breakfast. It's going to be at this certain place on a Friday morning. And 73 people showed up. And I wasn't prepared for that many people. And I pulled together some friends, and we kind of created this thing. And it was an event where we had many tables of discussion, two different topics. The first topic was, do you still believe goodness pays? Now, remember, the timing was when private business owners and people in most corporations had been laying off people, losing money. I mean, I remember a time when we worked for 4 months as partners without taking any salary out of the other business. And it was a time when lots of people were questioning their core. So the goodness subject turned out to be electric for this group. They did not want to stop talking about it. Overwhelmingly, they said, yes, we believe goodness pays. But also, they wanted more. And so we also had this subject that really became the part of our business that started quickest. And it's this idea of the 7 F's. And it's a framework that I invented with my friend Tim Schmidt. But the idea is that there are 7 words that all begin with the letter F. And if we incorporate all those things into our daily activities, both at home and at work, we can be a better leader and a happier person. And those 7 F's are faith, family, finances, fitness, friends, fun, and future. So faith is at the beginning, future is at the end, fitness is in the middle. And when we get people to do an intellectually honest assessment on how they're doing on those 7 things, we have this tool we invented called the 7 F's wheel. It's remarkably, the first time people do this exercise, we physically watch them change when they do it. And so we had half the group talking 7 F's, half the group talking about goodness. And when it was over, somebody raised their hand and said, when are we going to do this again? And I said, I wasn't planning on doing it again. This is how I got out of doing coffee with all you guys. But 2 friends had said, we have to do it again. One person named it. The other person created a structure. And what happened was that was the beginning of this thing we have today that's called the Good Leadership Breakfast Series. And since then, we have met for 9.5 years. We do 8 meetings a year. We've sold nearly 20,000 tickets, hosted nearly 20,000 guests. We've given away over $250,000 to charity, and it's sort of taken a life of its own. So now we gather around the idea that goodness pays, and we create a platform where leaders can talk about the intersection of their personal and professional lives and sort of give their own proof statements about how they believe leading with goodness pays for them in terms of reputation and financial results and loyalty to the market. And everything about my life got better when I committed to this idea that goodness pays, and my job was to make that concept come alive.
What were the struggles when trying to make that concept come alive? Because you're trying to change a culture, you know? That's tough.
You mean what are the struggles still today?
Yes, how about that?
So one other thing was accepting the bell curve. The bell curve applies in every situation, and we proved it. We did a big research project, and we landed on the idea with proof that 4 out of 5 leaders will actually say they do believe goodness pays. So you have to listen to those 4, because the 1 out of 5 can be at best neutral. At worst, they can be argumentative and skeptical and in many ways disruptive. So we try to honor that skeptic. but really talk to the 4 out of 5. I'm not trying to convince somebody that they should believe that goodness pays. So that's the first thing. The second thing is overcoming some of the myths. I think we discovered early on that sometimes people think goodness is a concept that only belongs in a religious connotation, and that, you know, it doesn't have any place in business. So sometimes that's where the resistance comes from. Others will think that it's a soft and squishy concept that can't be measured. So if I can't measure it, I can't manage it. So therefore, it doesn't belong in my business. And then the third source of resistance really had to do with the idea that they equated goodness with maybe too much kindness or being naive or weak, and that you get bullied or at least run over by a tough competitor. And over the years, through research and discussion, we've just proved that those myths really aren't true. The other obvious thing is that when we lay out the 7 F's and you start with faith, there's a certain group of people that just don't want to have that conversation. They're like, I love your 7 F's, but can you come and talk at my organization about just 6? Because we don't want to have that faith conversation. But what we've discovered, particularly, you know, I make my living mainly as an executive coach, and I've been doing that for almost 20 years. There's hardly an exception when a leader has been going through something very difficult, very challenging, you know, where they question themselves, where we don't have the faith conversation. So it's alive in our leadership. And our proposition is, if you embrace the idea that goodness pays, could your life actually be better if we had some kind of a faith conversation in the context of your leadership? We're not asking you to preach. We don't care who you are, you know, who you worship, do you worship, why or why not? That's none of my business. But how do you embrace the spiritual side of your leadership in ways that make people want to follow you with more intensity? That's how we think about faith in the equation, and that's how we think about goodness. The last thing I'll say about this is the research project that we did that resulted in our book that came out on November 1st of last year, of 2018. It's called How Goodness Pays. We landed on a definition that's ubiquitous, that people in business were able to accept. And the definition of goodness is this. Goodness is when people thrive together, both personally and professionally, in a culture of encouragement, accountability, and positive teamwork. So thrive together in a culture of encouragement, accountability, and positive teamwork. When we ran that definition through people, they said, you know, we can accept that. And so therefore, yeah, I actually do believe goodness. I believe in goodness, and I believe that's how we make our businesses pay. So it's kind of a long-winded answer, but when you have a point of view that's kind of contrarian, many people would say, well, I think most people believe that you have to lie, cheat, and steal to get ahead. And we're like, no, actually, we believe goodness pays, and we know that 4 out of 5 leaders believe that. So that's really the foundation of how we go to market.
That's awesome. I love that thought process. And I really like how you put faith first, even with that idea where it doesn't matter what you believe in, you just need something. You need a support, a structure.
Here's where the alphabet really helped us out. Because we listed the 7 F's in alphabetical order, because any other way would be political. So faith just ends up at the top, and it makes it really easy to understand it. But lots of times people go, oh, okay, I get it now. But in the early days, they thought I was trying to, you know, preach at them. And they hired me to speak, and all they really wanted me to do was witness. And it took me very few of those engagements to go, no, this is not where I'm going. And so then I changed the conversation to goodness, and it had less of that attraction to it.
Cool. I wanted to hear your take on superhero leadership, because I think it's really interesting that you were explaining that you need to let go of superhero leadership. So what is that, and why do people need to let go of it?
So we're all tempted to do this. You get promoted into a big job, or something gets really difficult, and you do a gut check, and you say, you know what? I need to step up. I need to work longer hours. I need to hold people accountable. I need to lead by example. And all those things in and of themselves are noble. But when you start to take over for people, you start to swoop in and do people's jobs for them, you know, the superhero idea is people, when someone swoops in and rescues you in a crisis. So if everybody on your team agrees we're in a crisis and you're the only one that can fix it, absolutely, superhero works. But as soon as the crisis goes away, nobody wants to be rescued. Particularly in this day and age, people want to be included. And we know that inclusion means that you're going to be engaged. So the superhero leadership is the exact opposite of goodness, but we're all tempted to do it. We've all been in a situation where somebody came and said, hey, dude, you know, back off a little bit. And so that's what we call the superhero leadership model. It's glamorized in the media and the movies. You know, we could talk about movies that you're thinking about that you say, oh yeah, that was they wrote a movie about her or about him. But in real life, it doesn't work, especially in this environment we're in today, where people expect to have the information they need. They expect transparency. They want open systems. They want to be engaged and involved. And in that context, they hate superhero leaders.
So what are a couple of things, and I'm thinking selfishly about myself as a leader.
Yep.
What are a few things you do to get away from that superhero leadership? Or how do you gut check yourself? Or what do you do to actually structure it in a way that you don't get to that point in your life?
It's a great question. It applies to everyone. So first thing you do is to be honest about who is your inner circle of people that make you better. The people that make your ideas better, the people that you can count on when you're down, the people that, you know, have really helped you succeed, and formalize that group, whether you call it your inner circle or your breakfast club or mastermind group or personal board of directors, doesn't matter. And say to them, I feel like I can fall into the superhero trap and I need your help. So what happens when you do that? You create what we call shared commitments, a group of people who are saying, for your own good, we're going to help you build a team and delegate and help people feel accountable. Because when you do that, you're actually leading and you're building a team. And so in order to do that, have shared commitments, you also have to give away what we call nagging rights. And nagging rights is a concept that says, if we agree and I see you slip off the path, I'm going to nag you. And I'm going to say, hey, dude, we agreed. That's not going to work. That's that superhero thing again. And we agree that's not good for anybody, so knock it off. But in order to do that, you've got to be, you know, real enough to give people the nagging rights with what we call zero cost of candor. This came from our book research. One of our top leaders said, you know, I think that's the most important thing, that you can be completely candid with people without thinking there'll be a political or a career cost associated with that candidness. So you declare that you don't want to be a superhero leader. You create a circle of people who are going to help you. You create some shared commitments. You give them nagging rights, and you make sure there's no cost for them being candid. That's the way we pull people out of the superhero leadership model.
Like it. I like it a lot. Mm-hmm. So the next thing I wanted to get into was, you bring up, I think it was in your bio, one of your keynotes, but how do you turn your biggest business challenge into your finest hour? So how do you really do that?
Yeah, so it relates to the superhero leadership thing. If you feel like it's all on you to solve that biggest challenge, you're probably defeating yourself right away, because it's based on this really very selfish, simple idea that nothing significant ever happens alone. If you believe nothing significant ever happens alone, the bigger the challenge, the more people you're going to get involved to help solve it. But we often do the opposite. We think, oh my God, this is huge. I got to step up and do this myself. So it becomes self-defeating. So the way to work yourself out of your biggest challenge is to open your arms wide, grab the people you need and bring them with you and have them solve it together. We talk about that good leaders know how to create a culture, a team-centered culture where the people involved actually care about each other, both personally and professionally. So when you create that caring environment, if you've got a really difficult challenge, they're actually going to be offended if they're not included in building the plans to solve that difficult problem. So the highest performing organizations create that care and concern, and they involve people in setting bold goals and also solving the most difficult problems together. If you do those two things, you don't have superhero leadership, and that's how you use the biggest challenges as your biggest opportunity to lead.
So when you really... I'm trying to think of the scenarios in which you're actually talking to these leaders. Commonly, yep. I got to assume a lot of them are type A, yep, a little bit uptight, and you're, yep, telling them how to change their lifestyle, yep, or culture, yep, in a sense.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Do you present it as this is the right thing to do, or do you present it through like ROI? You have to have multiple aspects to it, right?
Yeah. Well, most people that we work with have very big aspirations, very big goals, high expectations for growth. They want to outperform their markets and et cetera, et cetera. So what we do is we help them understand that good leaders actually create their own problems. If you've got bold goals and if you're trying to stretch every single day, you create problems you don't even see. So, you know, Einstein said we can't solve the problems with the same level of thinking that we use to create it. So like, unless you're a superhero and you can predict the future, let's rebuild your organization to help you get to the next level. When leaders are feeling frustrated or tired or like they have no time to themselves, it's usually because they've taken too much themselves and they're too far out front of their team. So we say, hey, let's just back up a little bit. Let's have a conversation with people, the people that are important to your success, about what really is the big opportunity here. Let's get everybody seeing things the same way, and let's build a team where you're giving away things to people. And that's the way, that's what works. That's what's worked for centuries. But, you know, we get distracted by our phones and our schedules and all the rest of that stuff. And I just had a CEO here in my office last week who said to me, you know, ever since he's been on this program for about 9 months, everything is going better. Our public scorecard with our dashboard measures that we track, every single thing is green. And he said, you know what, Paul? I'm kind of bored. I really don't have much to do. I'm realizing that I used to do everybody's work for them. And I was always coming into the office seeing what was on fire today that I needed to go put out. And he said, I have no fires. So you got to kind of help me. What should I be doing with my time? I'm feeling kind of guilty. And in some ways, that's the goal here, is to create enough space for top leaders. They create space by themselves by delegating meaningful work, helping people be accountable, and that gives them the free time then to really start thinking about, where does my organization need to be 7 years from now? And if it needs to be there 7 years from now, what do we have to do to 3 years from now and 2 years from now and 1 year? If the CEO is not doing that kind of thinking, who the heck is? So our goal is to free up some space so that people can actually have the time and the space to show up and ways that are calm and optimistic and to do that kind of thinking. And once they get there, you can just sort of feel the whole organization radiating goodness. And that's what we think is the goal here.
That's really got to increase innovation within the organization.
Yeah, it increases everything good that you want.
So what are the other biggest challenges you run into with these executives, in the sense that what else are these leaders struggling with?
So there's usually an oh crap moment when they realize how many things they're going to have to shift when they shift the smallest thing in their own behaviors. So sometimes you have to rebuild your executive team to a smaller group in order to have a real intimate group that can give zero cost of candor. Okay, so if you do that, you have to tell some people they're no longer going to be on that team. And some people get really upset about it. Some of them might leave. Or if you've got to really have the development conversations with people about why you're not candid with them, that's really hard work. And so once we kind of make a shift at the top, there are all sorts of things down in the organization that need to shift to catch up with it. And there are moments where people say, oh my God, I can't believe I signed up for this. We're also honest with people by saying, you know, the definition we use for transformation, if you really want to transform your organization, you'll hear leaders say, we need to get to, quote, the next level. Well, you don't get to the next level with incrementalism. It just never works that way. So what you're doing is taking on the burden to transform your organization. And transformation means that 3 years from now, you'll be measuring 50% of the things you measure differently. And you'll also be doing at least 50% of the behaviors differently in order to get there. So when you think about, if I were to tell you, you're going to be measuring 50% of what you do today differently, and you'll be doing 50% different things 3 years from now, you go, whoa, that's a lot of change in my life, both personally and professionally. So what we do is we help those people through that sort of shock and awe of what it really means to transform. So sometimes the enormity of it seems like too much to take on. That's one of the challenges that we face.
Do you ever get pushed out the door?
Yeah, and we quit too. When we feel like people say one thing and don't do another. Like, one of the concepts in the book is this thing called magnetic ethics, that the leaders who know how to make goodness pay, their ethics and their day-to-day behaviors are completely consistent with their standards and their role model in it. So they're attracting people who want the same thing. So if they say they want to learn how to make goodness pays, and they have two different dialogues, a dialogue in their executive team or a dialogue with their owners, and it's different dialogue than they have with their employees, that's not sustainable. It's actually not truthful. And so if we feel like we run into people who have a double standard, then we're going to quit, because we don't want anybody on the street that's got a double standard saying, yeah, we tried good leadership, but it didn't work for us. So it's sort of a brand protection thing for us. And we do have some other leaders who say, you know what, I didn't sign up for this kind of disruption in my organization, and we need to take a break. And usually when they do that, they never come back.
So do you ever actually help find a leader for a company? Like, do you ever help with that search or give feedback on something like that? Are there any examples of that?
We don't consider ourselves a search firm. We help them do the hard work to decide who are they trying to find? What does that person look like? I had another CEO in my office just this morning where we started thinking, his assignment was to come up with three names of people that can help him figure out what his next chief operating officer is going to look like. The one he has now has given him a 9-month time frame. She's going to take an early retirement. It's very harmonious, but he understands that they're in transformational mode and that he probably can't even picture what that COO is going to look like. So we help with that visioning process and trying to engineer what that person is going to look like, what kind of background and things. But then we refer to search firms, and you know, we help with referral networks and things like that. But we don't consider ourselves to be a search firm in any way, shape, or form.
Cool. And I completely understand that. I was just curious if these executive groups just wanted you to take a deeper look into these CEOs or whatever else and give feedback on them.
Sometimes we will sit on the interview team, but I make it very clear that we don't have a vote. It's not our job. More than anything, what I try to do is to help the candidates understand what they think they're getting themselves into, because I know the organizations really well and the leader really well.
That's pretty cool. Let's talk about being unstuck, because I think a lot of people feel stuck, like whether you're a leader or not. And you talk about this bucket list and aspirational thinking. Yeah. And I think that can apply to every single person's life.
Yeah. So I love it. You've done good homework. We have two places in our firm where we use the word unstuck. We wrote a bright paper called Unstuck, and it's by far our most popular one. And, you know, you can find it at goodleadership.com.
We'll link to it.
Yeah, thank you. We also wrote a book with my really good friend Mark Bergman, who's an inventor, and he invented this thing called the handy paint pail. And you know, we've used it as a bucket list, as you know, with a bucket. We used it as a bucket to collect money, but also to help sort of compile bucket list items for our executive leadership coaching clients. Here's the connection: that when we feel stuck in our lives, personally or professionally, what it means is we've sort of lost sight of our future. And we're looking inward, and our eyes go down, and we just can't see how this is going to resolve itself. So instead of focusing on the problem and the fact that we're stuck, we use aspirational psychology. It's the positive psychology model. There's research out there that proves that aspirational thinking is the best way to help overcome a hard-to-break habit or our natural human, you know, tendency for negativity. And so this is how it works. We encourage people to come to a coaching meeting with a bucket list. And we say, you know what, whatever, and explain to me why. What happens immediately is their body chemistry and their mood and their brain changes. The process of thinking about what's possible, it opens up the part of your brain that creates happiness hormones, that creates possibilities. And leaders are at their very best when they're helping people see possibilities. So after the bucket list game, we do this aspirational exercise that's in the bright paper and in the book. And we call it 27-3-1. 20 years out is what Jim Collins talked about as the big, hairy, audacious goal in his books. The first one was called Built to Last, and then the next one was called Good to Great. The idea is that companies that really change the world, they have this idea that's so big, and so exciting that the hair will stand up on the back of your neck or your arms when you talk about it. So big, hairy, audacious goal, 20 years out. So I'm 55 years old. I just redid my aspirational framework, and I have a compelling picture about how I want to live 70 years when I'm 75, 20 years from now. Then in order to get there, we do visioning work about where do we have, what does that have to look like 7 years from now? So if I'm going to be that at 75, where do I have to be at 62 in order to make that happen? Then we turn it into a strategic plan that's 3 years out, 2 years out, and 1 year out. When we get a leader who comes to us who's stuck for any reason, when we get them to do the 27-3-1 thing, we get them unstuck immediately. It's magic. And it's the part of coaching that is so rewarding because there are all sorts of things that can get people stuck. Getting them unstuck is just an unbelievable privilege. And we are lucky we get to do that.
So when you're trying to find this, how did you say, big, hairy, audacious goal, whatever it is?
Yep.
Is there a goal? How do you define that? How do you know if your goal is way too big, if it's way too small, if your vision isn't strong enough to actually follow through with that goal?
Yeah. So an idea without a deadline is just a dream. And dreams are cool. I mean, dreams transform people. Lots of people have had dreams. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, "I have a dream," is one of the most famous things in modern culture, right? But what we talk about is dreams are one thing. But when you put a time period on it, then it turns it into something we can actually manage and go towards. So I intend to still be the CEO of my firm at 75. I love doing this work. So then you say, okay, if that's going to happen, what has to happen in my life over the next 7 years from a strategy standpoint? First of all, I have to take care of myself on the 7 Fs. I do a lot of travel. I need to be in good shape. I need to get good sleep so that the travel doesn't, you know, take years off my life. I don't intend to work as hard as I'm working now. I need to find people who do the things that I do. And so 7 years from now, the place staffing will look differently. Even 3 years from now, the staffing will look differently. So your question is about how do you put like parameters on what your 20 year is? This goes back to what we talked about earlier. If you've got that advisory group, you can come to them and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. I've been feeling stuck lately. I need a change some way, shape, or form. Here's what I'm thinking about 20 years from now. Here's what I'm thinking about 7 years from now. So what do you guys think needs to happen 3, 2, and 1 years from now? Sometimes leaders decide, you know what? I need to leave. Or I need a major change in what's going on here. I need to change my role. I need to change my staff. I need to do something because I don't like being stuck. And this is never going to get me where my aspirations are. So that's kind of the psychology about how it works. Getting other people involved to share your aspirations is how you make sure it's realistic and you build that group that's going to help you get there. That's like putting jet fuel in the airplane.
That's really cool. And I think you're going to have such amazing advice for our quick fire questions that they're going to be longer. So I want to get into those right now just because okay. I think we're going to dig deeper into them. So every week we have one random question. So this can be something absurd. So I haven't even looked at what the random one is yet. So
I can't wait.
Do you think the world would be a better or worse place if everyone suddenly could read each other's thoughts?
I think it would be really scary. I think we're sort of seeing that now with what cell phones in everyone's pocket means. I don't think we figured out as a society how to handle that kind of information sharing and transparency. I mean, if everybody that had a Twitter handle that didn't have their name and could put, if we knew exactly who they were that said that kind of stuff, I don't think they'd say 50% of what they put out there. So I think that would be pretty darn scary.
Okay, I think that's the right answer. I would agree. I'd be horrified of what you're thinking about me right now. Okay, the second one. So what skills does a young professional need straight out of college to be successful? And you're dealing with leaders. And just what are those traits or those things that they should be focused on?
I'm not going to talk about skills per se. I'm going to just talk about a basic value system. Do what you say you're going to do. It's the simplest thing ever. We have hired a lot of young people to come into our firm, and we love their energy. But it is amazing to me that there are some kids that don't know how to do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it. And something along the line has allowed them to think that if you say you're going to do it, that there are excuses for not doing it. If you want to get respect and grow your career, you got to do what you say you're going to do. That's the first thing. The second thing is to cultivate the ability to be intellectually honest with yourself. I mean, it doesn't do any good for you to tell yourself a story that's not true in your head. That's what coaches do. We identify the stories people tell in their heads, and we just make sure that people are being honest in between their ears. And particularly entrepreneurs, we know we have big dreams and we know we can push our way through it, but sometimes we get ourselves in big trouble when we're not really being honest about the size of the challenge or the resources required, and that's when you start getting exhausted and that's when you get stuck. I think two things: do what you say you're going to do and learn how to be intellectually honest with yourself.
Okay, so it's kind of within those two realms. I'm thinking about it from being a youngster, and I think about the first company that we built, right?
Yep.
And I'm thinking about the challenges we took on. We didn't know how to do those, right? But in my mind, I was like, oh yeah, we can do those. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you were saying, at least for me personally, it's hard to find that balance between what I really can do and having this mindset that forces me to go above and beyond what I'm able to do and not overcommitting. So how in the world, as a youngster, or I guess even as an older adult, how do you balance that? Because you always want to push yourself, but you also don't want to not follow through, I guess.
Well, I'm going to go back to my original advice. You build a support system and you build a life around the 7 F's. We run into people all the time who do the 7 F's wheel, and they've got money, their future looks great, but their friend's score is low, their family score is really low, and you can see them hurting inside. You need, I don't care who you are, you need to have supportive relationships that can be defined by the 7 F's, and that will help you prioritize. It'll help you stay honest with yourself. It'll help you get through the really difficult times. And if you have the right people around you, they're going to keep encouraging your big goals. But when you fail, it's okay to say, you know what, I failed. I don't want to do that again. That's intellectual honesty. If you blame it on somebody else, that's not intellectual honesty, and it's going to happen again.
Gotcha.
So build a support group, use the 7 F's, and be intellectually honest. It's really a simple formula.
And so when you use the 7 F's, mm-hmm. And I think some people might wonder, okay, you know, I'm looking through these F's and I have a certain number of friends. I talk to my family once a week. How do you guys actually measure the F's?
Yeah. Okay. So we measured on a wheel. And so there are 7 spokes, 1 for each of the 7 F's. And each spoke has numbers, 1 in the middle all the way to 10 at the outside. So we asked people to circle a number, 1 through 10, on each one of the 7 F's wheel. On 7F spokes of the wheel. 1 means it couldn't be any worse right now for you at this moment in time. 10 means it couldn't be any better. And we see all the time wheels that have 8s and 9s and 1s and 2s on the same wheel. And you're like, whoa, and people see that? And we ask them, you know, to do the kindergarten exercise and connect the dots. It creates a shape. And we say, so will your 7F wheel roll? Most people go, no. They say things like cha-chunk or, you know, it's spiky. And you say, well, how does that feel? Well, it doesn't feel very good. And you say, well, in a coaching context, you can say, so you take that doesn't feel very good energy into work. How does that work for you? And they're like, well, I don't like it. So, well, let's build some plans to make it better. And when people are growing outside of work, they're also growing inside of work, and vice versa. So the 7S wheel, it's a beautiful concept. And when people feel their satisfaction rise on any of those 7 F's, their mood changes. Where we love to see our scores improve in anything. It's just who we are. So intellectual self-honesty on the 7 F's, it's important.
And I know this is not one of the quick fire questions, but I'm just so interested in these 7 F's and this wheel. How do you make sure people are intellectually honest with themselves? There has to be an insane amount of people that are walking in day one and they're not actually actually circling the numbers that are truly relatable to their life because they want to roll better.
So we find people are actually, they're harder on themselves than they should be. We seldom see anybody that's willing, that will inflate their scores. And here's how I know that. So the first time people do a 7 F's wheel, we ask them to talk to other people about their 7 F's wheel. And so they stand up and talk to strangers, our colleagues, for two to five minutes about their wheel, and then we ask them to switch. And they do six or seven what we call, you know, buddy coaching sessions. And then we say, okay, now what are you thinking about your 7S wheel? And they always go, wow, I'm a really hard grader. Or I got it a lot better than I thought I did. People around this room, they got worse scores than me. Can we do it again? It's usually people give themselves lower scores because they're really hard on themselves, or they're full of the tyranny of the should. Well, I should be skinnier, or I should have this much in my portfolio by this moment in time, or I should go to church more often. And we're like, you know what? Knock it off. We didn't ask you about shoulds. We ask about how satisfied are you at this moment in time on these seven things. Most of the time, people are harder on themselves. We seldom find people that will fib in a happier way.
That's awesome. That's super interesting. Yep. Okay, quick fire question number three. What do you believe needs to be sacrificed for success?
Well,
or maybe in your case, more importantly, what doesn't need to be?
The idea that you can be at everything. I have sadness for both kids and parents when the parent sees the kid play every hockey game they've ever played. I don't think that's good for society. I don't think it's good for the parent. I don't think it's good for the kid. And there are certain things that as a leader you need to be present for in your family's lives. But the world does not operate on having a family member watch every hockey game you play. That's fairy tale land. And so I see some people make extraordinary commitments for their work, but I see as many make extraordinary commitments for their home life that adds artificial stress. It just doesn't need to be that way. And so, you know, my kids understood that maybe mom will be there, maybe dad will be there, maybe sometimes they won't be there. And we'll say, hey, how'd the game go today, kid? But it's not the end of the world. I mean, I think we have to understand you can't be all things to all people. You got to take time for self-care. And sometimes that means just blocking off a time on your calendar where you're not going to work and you don't need to be accountable for telling people what you're doing. That's what I think. You got to sacrifice the idea that you can do it all. You just can't.
Sounds like you really need to perfect the power of saying no.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Setting boundaries. Yep.
Cool. Last quick fire question here. So what is one life hack young professionals should apply this week to their lives to either become more successful, happier, be a better leader, whatever it is?
I'm going to give a double answer. Embrace the 7 F's. Those 7 things will be with you for your entire journey. Second thing, find somebody to mentor. You know, good leadership is about another's orientation. Mentors always get back more than they give. So if you want to grow, find somebody to mentor. If you don't know who that is, go someplace. Go to the Boys and Girls Club. Go join a Mentium group. Go to your church. Go someplace. Find somebody to mentor. Good leadership is an other's orientation. When we get self-centered, things always go wrong. So be others oriented.
I love that. So if somebody out there right now is listening and says, how can I go mentor someone when I'm in college or I'm just graduating? I don't know anything. I don't have experience. What's your advice? Should they still go do it?
Well, first of all, I'd say that's positively not true. You know, name an 18-year-old that can't give some life advice to a 12-year-old. I mean, it just doesn't, or a 30-year-old that can't give some advice to a 21-year-old. It's just not true. And actually, it goes back to the intellectually honest. When somebody says to me, I have nothing that I can give, that's either a confidence issue or they're not being honest with each other, with themselves. So, you know, it's just all about being real. Maybe they're hesitant. Maybe they're afraid. Maybe they don't want to. Those are all coping mechanisms. But, you know, mentoring is not rocket science. It's, you know, asking somebody, hey, who do you want to be with when you grow up and how can I help you? As soon as somebody answers that, answers that question, you're mentoring. It's not rocket science.
Sweet. I think that's the best way to kind of sum up this whole podcast. And I guess before I let you go, yep. Do you have any ask of the audience? You want them to reach out? You want them to read one of your books?
Well, I'll just say two things. We talked a lot about Unstuck and about 7S Wheel. 7S Wheel is in the Unstuck Bright Paper, but also the 7S Wheel is free on our website. We decided not to try to own the intellectual property. We think it's too good for humanity, so we want anybody to take it, use it a million times. We want somebody to get it and send it to everybody in their database. It would be fantastic. So go get the 7S Wheel, discover that for yourself. The second thing is, yeah, from a commercial standpoint, we're really, really proud of the How Goodness Pays book. I believe I will still be teaching and talking and writing and coaching on the How Goodness Pays research 20 years from now. We think it's that significant. We've got fantastic reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I would encourage people to go get the How Goodness Pays book. It's proven research that if you lead that way, you will exceed your goals personally and professionally. The data is there. You can see the correlation yourself. So, yeah, howgoodnesspays.com. That would be great. We would appreciate it.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much, Paul, for joining us this week.
You're welcome. Absolutely. And congratulations to you for having the courage to do a podcast and to stay with it. You know, it's hard. I'm a blogger. I've been writing a blog once a week for 9.5 years. It's hard to stay with it. So congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay, guys, closing time for the Master of the Start podcast. I know it's so sad. We're already done with the 25th episode. Some quick reminders from this podcast. Number one, do not forget about the importance of integrity in business. As Paul mentioned, if you say you're going to do something, just do it. Number two, this week, here's your life actionable lesson that you're going to use. Fill out the 7 F's wheel. We have it linked in the show notes. Fill out the 7 F's wheel and do a better job embracing faith, family, finances, fitness, friends, fun, and future. Also this week, find someone to mentor. That's a short little synopsis, but make sure you find someone to mentor and enjoy your week. We'll see you on Master of the Start episode number 26 in 7 days from now.